Hey, this is Dexter Sites.
My name's Caleb Wood.
My name is Billy McLaughlin.
And you're listening. You are listening to the Drum Report.
To the GoPro Drum Report.
To GoPro Drum Report.
On Verbmoto.
On Verbmoto.
On Verbmoto.
Welcome to another edition of the Verb Pod Network's Drum Report, brought to you by GoPro. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt, but with me on the line, a very special guest, a guy that I've been wanting to have on the podcast for a long period of time, finally dialed him up and made it happen. Canyon Richards, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you. It's awesome being on here.
Yes, sir. It's Canyon 316, dude. Like, you are all over the place. Sometimes you're in the woods. Sometimes you're on the moto track. Sometimes you're jumping supercross triples on a Suron, which kind of blows my mind, mainly because I can't imagine jumping one of those on a 250F or a 450. Never mind doing so on an electric bicycle. But maybe you can give us a little peek behind the curtain of what that experience is like. But before we get to that, let's get some particulars. Who the heck is Canyon Richards, and why the hell am I calling you right now?
I'm Canyon Richards, and I love having fun on pit bikes and stuff, but I race 250 mod class now, and yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Perfect. Well, whereabouts are you from, my friend?
New Jersey, all the way up north.
Heck yeah, up north in New Jersey. I'm actually from a little bit further north than you, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which doesn't mean much to you aside from you know that it's very cold where I'm at. It's currently minus 28, which is why I'm inside doing a podcast with you right now, trying to get those warmer vibes. Where do you train at?
I train at Star and a few other tracks around here, and I'm staying in Florida right now.
Killer, dude, killer. So we've seen you in the past riding KTMs, and honestly, the last time we saw you on a grander stage was racing a super mini at the SMX races. Sounds like you've changed brands a little bit, and you're full 250 all the time. I think you probably could have been on a big bike a little bit sooner. You're a tall drink of water as far as an athlete goes. Good to see you on the full size bike, and setting your sights on the 250B class. That's a hotly contested class, my friend.
Yes, no more super minis. I was definitely super tall on those, but I'm riding for NSA Yamaha right now on the Mod 250, and I'm feeling great on it.
Dude, that is sick. So what's been the transition like for you going from a Cromoli steel frame bike to an aluminum frame Yamaha? That's a lot of changes, two-stroke to four-stroke, the whole thing. But I know you'd been on four-strokes for quite some time and also jumping quite a good distance. What's that transition like been like for you?
Yeah, so I had a KTM 250 all last year that during the weekdays that if we don't have a race coming up, I'll just train on the 250 because it's a lot cheaper to maintain because super minis blow up every 6 hours pretty much. So about every 4 to 5, you got to rebuild them. It's a lot of maintenance work on them. And the steel frames, I love them when they flex. So jumping onto the aluminum 250 frame, it was a lot getting used to. It took a few months to figure out how many hours it takes to break in, what it flexes, how fast you can come into turns and what body position and everything you have to use. So it was a big change on that, but we're doing good right now and we're ready to hit Spring Nationals hard.
Killer, man. And just so you know, I'm trying to make you feel as at home as possible or not when it comes to being big on mini bikes. I'd sent you a picture of myself riding my KX85 late in 2003 when you probably weren't even born yet, letting you know you're not the only person who's been way too big on a mini bike racing those damn things. I think I was all of maybe 5'10". And that's not even a big wheel. That is a standard KX85 that my dad kept me on because there was contingency involved. You're not the only one, my friend. It's a common story.
Yes, I was 5'10 on a KTM Super Mini, and the funny thing is, I built myself a custom seat, so I would do a tall 250 seat, the tallest 250 seat that they make for a KTM.
Uh-huh.
And I would take my mom's kitchen butter knife or steak knife.
Yeah.
And I would cut the front and back of it off, and I would shape it to fit a 85 Super Mini seat frame, so then I could put it on a Super Mini. So that was how tall my seat was.
That is that is a little bit over the top, but hey, whatever we need to do to get the job done, my friend, you're no stranger to that whatsoever. So on Yamahas now, I'm sure it's a welcome change for you once you got used to the flex characteristics and just how the bike runs. Everything that I've heard about the modern day Yamahas is they're a cut above as far as just fit, finish, and overall performance. Rolling into Spring Nationals, are you going to be heading down to Texas as well as kind of like a Texas two-step? Is there any chance that you make it even further west and see you at World Mini in about 1 month's time?
No, I won't be there. So we'll be leaving in a few days, going to Daytona. I'm going to race there, and then we're going to drive all night to Freestone, race the next day, or practice the next day, Wednesday, I believe it is, race all Freestone, and then we'll be driving to Oak Hill for a Spring-a-Ding, and we'll be racing there.
Killer. That is an action-packed 3 weeks of racing. Have you done the Daytona race before? Obviously, probably on little bikes?
Yes. When I was first on Yamaha 85s and 65s, I used to do all the nationals and everything. The funny thing is my birthday was always on March 16th, which was during Freestone.
Which is also why you're number 316. Okay, yeah, I get it.
Yes. So once I got off Yamaha and I started doing GNCC, we would like to take a little bit of break from motocross. So we didn't do Spring Nationals. We basically only did Minios, qualifiers, regionals for Loretta's, and only a few nationals, really. And then we did 2 years of full GNCC. And now we're back at it, hitting it hard again with Yamaha, back on Yamaha on 250s now.
That is wild, dude. Yeah, you've had quite the story. And you on the come up for a lot of years now. It seems like you've kind of been on the radar, someone who's got a flashy style, you're fun to watch. You seem to really, I wouldn't say play up to the crowd, but it seems like you feed off of the energy of the crowd when they're watching you do your thing. You're an entertaining guy to watch ride a motorcycle. Where does that stem from?
Just when I was little, my dad would always build super peaky jumps. We never had the best equipment, but he came from BMX world, so like just making dirt jumps in the woods. So everything was super steep. It was pretty safe, but I was always used to super steep stuff because we didn't have a lot of land growing up. So we'd go to a different friend's house. We'd be like, yo, can we use your dozer or skid steer? Mm-hmm. And New Jersey is mostly woods, so it'd just be jumps, tracks through the woods. So all growing up on 50s, 65s, and 85s, I was used to super steep stuff. So that's why I love like play riding and supercross. Like that's my style. I like the technical steep transitions and different like objects that a normal person wouldn't do daily.
No kidding. No, so like I don't know exactly the area. Obviously, probably seen some videos of you riding in those areas. But the first thing that comes to mind when you're explaining that is essentially the tracks that I remember watching Travis Pastrana train on back in the day. Like literally, it was like a motocross track, but it's like in the woods with like these massive jumps that he's like kind of high fiving the branches while he's doing some of this stuff. Is that sort of along the same lines?
Yes. So the track that I actually won Loretta's out of, it was in my friend's backyard. He owned a meat company, so he had sold meat. And he was into dirt bikes, and Jason Lawrence actually grew up in the same town, so he rode there all the time. So sometimes we would see him out there, but my dad built a track, and he wasn't the greatest on dozer. So nothing was really smooth, but he just knew how to build some big stuff. So everything was huge, and it was just all through the woods. You'd knock down some trees to make them straight sections, but you wouldn't have much, like, acreage to make jumps and stuff. Like, it's not like you just say, hey, just make the track go that way. If there's trees in the way, you can't go that way. So
right.
You just have to go wherever the openings are. Until we bought our 50 acres, and then it was an old sand pit, and we built a huge track there, and all the jumps are massive. Almost 75% of the jumps are over 100 foot. The biggest one is 140, and then we have a few step-ups that are 130, 120 tabletop, so everything is pretty much over 100 foot.
That's pretty extreme, dude. Like, have you ever had any, like, close calls out there? Like, you're really kind of pushing the limits of where you would be comfortable, in a lot of those situations. Like, that's pretty over the top as far as having basically a training ground for a young athlete like yourself. Is that just the way you wanted it to be, or did you have some close calls as well?
Yes, not average people can ride there. But we made sure we made everything super safe. So like the 140 foot jump we have, it's a huge double. The lip is huge, but the landing, there's like a deck that it like slowly starts going down. So you can land anywhere from 130 foot to 155.
Yeah, that's
so
not exactly.
Everything
that's
is pretty safe.
That's a pretty big sweet spot as far as where you're landing. We saw a lot last year. You'd sort of started pushing the limits on a big bike on the 250F. Were you jumping those same things on the Super Mini?
Yes, there is actually a video that circles around the internet that here and there I keep seeing it pop up on different pages.
Amazing.
Of me hitting that 140 foot jump on my Super Mini, and the funny thing is you're in the air so long on the two-stroke that all the gas drains out of the carb and you can hear it bog in the air because you're in the air for so long, not on the gas, and then it bogs and then gets back on the gas and cleans it out.
Amazing. So like you seem like a guy who still enjoys riding the two strokes. And I've kind of said this until I'm blue in the face on the Grom reports that, in order to go pro, in order to race the professional level, you're going to have to be on four strokes. But I would like to think that throughout Canyon Richards' career, whether you're in the woods or on a motocross track, racing supercross, what have you, that you might still keep, maybe a YZ 252 stroke or a 125 in the shed, that you don't dust off every once in a while, just to give the people what they want. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's ever going to get old listening to a 125 or a 252 stroke, in the right hands, someone who knows how to keep the thing on the pipe, and doing so on a track where they're just wide open, kind of everywhere, doing it. Like if you could sort of like every 6 months or so, just give that to the good people of, the world of the internet, that would be appreciated.
Yeah. I definitely love that. Our outdoor track has big sand sweepers, and I love listening to the two-stroke just scream around the turns.
I love it. So, like, coming up for Daytona, any particular training specific for Daytona? It's a very different race surface. I know they tame the track down quite a bit for the amateur portion of it, but what are your expectations rolling in, and how have you prepared yourself to be successful at that event?
Right now, I feel pretty good. The last 3 days, we have a Daytona mock-up track that I have been training on, and that's at MTF. So I've been riding over there the last 3 days, and the track is awesome. Half supercross, half motocross, and it's pretty steep. Like, all the rhythms are pretty much full-scale pro rhythms. So I think the track is going to be more mellow when I get to Daytona, so I feel like I'm coming in with a good training regimen.
Killer. That is wild. And you're going to have to literally drive, and there's no fast way to get from Daytona to Texas. Like, I know Freestone, it's not exactly at like the bottom of Texas, so you save a little bit of time that way, but like, that is not a short drive whatsoever. You're going to get behind the wheel, not totally unlike when you were in Chicago and then needed to be at a GNCC like 9 hours later.
Yes, that was crazy. I knocked myself out of SMX.
Yes.
Supercross on the finish line. I was knocked out for a good bit, and then we had jumped in the camper as fast as we could, drove through the night, got up at 6:30 in the morning, hopped on the bike. My right leg could barely even work. So the funny thing is, on the start, I couldn't kick my bike. I tried to, and I was completely dead last. I had to have somebody push me and bump start it because my leg really wouldn't work. But it's about 20 hours, I believe, from Daytona to Texas. So as soon as we get off the track, do the podiums, all that, and then jump in the car, and I'll be in the van with my mechanic, and my dad will be in the RV. So we'll get there a little bit quicker. So we're going to drive as fast as we can with the speed limit, obviously.
Yes.
But
thank you for giving that caveat for the law enforcement people listening to this podcast.
Yeah, so we'll drive halfway through the night, probably sleep a little bit, get up early in the morning, and get there the next day around noon or a little bit after, just enough for me to see the track and get ready for the next day of practice.
That is wild, dude. Like I can't imagine, like for you, like that is kind of, it's a wild ride and a great adventure to be on. But I hope you know how many people are listening to this podcast right now who could only ever dream of being able to execute a weekend like that or a moto adventure quite like that. Like being able to race the Daytona Amateur Supercross is like a bucket list event for a lot of young amateur racers. And then to embark on like basically just a blitz across the country to go do the very same thing at Freestone, a former national track. Like that's pretty incredible. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Yes, you definitely have to have good people in your corner. I have an awesome team backing me up. So we'll have a bike down at Freestone already. It'll be sitting there with the semi and everyone else's bikes, and I'll be riding a separate bike at Daytona. So then we don't have to do bike work or nothing. We just wash the bike, put it in the van, get over there as fast as we can, and I'll just show up and my bike's already ready, and then we'll practice the next day.
What's it like being that cool?
So I never really had a mechanic before.
I know.
I was always doing all the bike works.
Yeah,
like
you're washing,
if I blew
driving.
A bike up and I had to ride the next day for training, I would have to stay up at night and I had to be swapping motors myself because my dad's like, you're doing it yourself because I'm going working. I got to work in the morning. So I'd be staying up till 10 o'clock, swapping super mini motors, shipping them out to my motor builder and riding the next day. So having a mechanic, my mechanic's name is Mason. He's an awesome mechanic. He gets my bikes running next day. We got to swap motors. He do it super quick and gets me out there for the next session. And yeah, he's awesome.
That's got to be a huge weight off your shoulders and off your mind as well, just to focus on, like, I just got to go fast on the dirt bike. I don't have to worry about tearing this thing down. I don't have to worry about getting it right and making sure that the spokes are this or the engine's that. And yeah, you must have been going through motors and pistons and top ends like no tomorrow on those super minis, because you're not a big guy, but you're not tiny either on an engine that's just not built to carry someone who's probably upwards of 160 pounds racing against kids that are like 120.
The funny thing is my whole super mini career last year, mm-hmm. I was only 120.
Really?
I was just super tall. Yes.
Okay.
I was only 120 the whole entire year. Because I weighed myself in when I
but a freezer full of steaks and a barbecue.
Yeah, so we try to eat a good meal to get me like bulking a little bit more and more muscle. So all the weight I get is just straight muscle. I have like barely any body fat on me. So when I first got on the 250, I was 122 pounds when I first weighed myself in at Yamaha. And yeah, I got up to 130 now, and we're keep getting heavier. I'll have to fit the bike, and yeah, we're just keep grinding every day on the bike and off the bike. But yeah, it's awesome having a mechanic. All I do is show up, I get ready, I hop on the bike, and I've got to wash it or nothing like that.
That is awesome, dude. And so what's the dynamic on NSA Yamaha? And like, if I'm not mistaken, unless you guys are riding different classes, you're going to be going head to head with like Cade Johnson, who is also on that team. Like, is he running different classes than you? Is he schoolboy one, you're schoolboy two? How does that going to work? And is there going to be animosity under the tent? Because he's a Texas boy. And yeah, he's actually from like Utah originally, but he's from Texas. You're like New Jersey by way of like Florida basically now. How's that going to work? And what's the dynamic underneath the tent?
Yeah, so he will be in 250 stock class, and they hired a guy, Max Shane. He's awesome too. He'll
right, he was on Super Minis too. You guys are both big on Super Minis.
Yeah, he was racing. He got second, I believe, at SMX, and they're both in stock class. I won't be racing anybody under our NSA 10. That's okay. In mod class with me. So
that's for the best. Is less in team animosity.
Yeah, I skipped stock year, so I just went straight from Super Minis to mod 250. I skipped a whole year of stock.
That's wild. So when you first jumped, like obviously you'd been riding the 250F. We've said that till we're blue in the face. On the KTM, when you first jumped on a full mod, like Yamaha 250, like we know those things bark. Like, that must have been, like, just a smile from ear to ear moment for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. So, it wasn't actually, like, I just got on this thing and I was like, wow, this thing has a lot of power. I started on a completely bone stock YZ250 when I was at my house in New Jersey before I started coming down to train in Florida. So, I rode a stock bike for about a month or two. And then they gave me a base model mod bike, and we just slowly made it faster and faster until it's a regular mod bike.
But okay. We started. That's smart, though, too. Get it, like, just, yeah, just like giving you the full thing right out of the hop. Like, that's just a lot of things to adjust to. And like, where do you go from there? Whereas if you start from, I think that's a very common thing now, because actually it wasn't always that way. A lot of times they're just like, all right, here's the mod bike. Go, man, go. Like, you've sort of like, in your own way, developed yourself, like your riding style and the bike itself, along with it, eventually getting to that full package.
Yeah. So they wanted me to ring the stock bike out until I figured out what its full potential is, and then slowly give me more and more and more until I'm at the full mod bike. So then I don't get on it and I'm not controlling the power by the clutch. So I know how to ride the bike properly.
Fair enough. So that's interesting to know. So throughout your career as an amateur motocross racer, also in the woods, what would you say is maybe the best advice that you can give to young racers, young families that are wanting to take this more seriously? They want to get the most out of their training, and they want to be able to put themselves in the best position to be successful in this sport. You do a lot of your own bike work. You're an extremely hardworking kid. You do also have a lot of fun with it. Like, what kind of message would you have for someone who's looking to do a little bit more of this themselves?
If you're a younger kid, I would say from Super Minis and down, just keep fun in it. Just make, like, there's a time for work and there's a time for play. But when you're working, do it full-heartedly. But keep a little bit of fun in it here and there. Like, go ride your pit bikes, like, on the weekend or something. Have a little bit fun so then you don't grow up and you're like, oh, I don't like this stuff anymore. But, yeah, once you get on a full factory program, it's hard. There's not really any fun in it. Like, it's full work. You got to put in the work and you got to execute on the track and you got to go win championships. But as a kid, I would still keep it a little bit fun.
Fair enough. I think that's great advice, and people can learn a lot from just how you carry yourself and the way that you enjoy the sport, the way you compete in the sport, You're a great role model for a lot of kids, and I think that's why you have the following that you have on social media. If people aren't already following Canyon Richards 316 on Instagram, they need to be, mainly because of the visual spectacularness that is riding, watching you ride a dirt bike. But I have a lot of respect for the way that you carry yourself on and off the track. You've always got a smile on your face, but you're as serious as a heart attack when it comes to actually racing and doing your thing on the bike. So I think there's a lot to be gained from both of those things, and you seem to carry yourself with not only a lot of confidence, but also humble, like I need to keep working, I need to keep putting myself in a good position to be successful. There's a lot to be learned from that. So you're doing a good job, man.
Yeah, you gotta stay humble, keep a smile on your face, and you're not always gonna be the best. There's always gonna be someone else that you can learn from and pick up tips. So when you're riding with the pros, you just figure out what you can do better and what they're doing better than you, that you can figure out that and execute it. And because there's always a way you can get faster and figure out stuff from other people.
Love it, my friend. Well, this is Canyon Richards here on the Verb Pod Network. This has been the Grom Report. Canyon, I just got to wish you the best of luck in for the next 3 weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing your results and the riding clips that come along with it. And then when it all kind of crescendos to the end of the year, it's not even at the end of the year, but like the biggest event of the year, which will be the Loretta's Amateur National Championships. Like last year, I think you might have left a little bit on the table as far as what you were really able to do. I know you had some bikes let go. But all in all, I think it was, you put a lot of people on notice that you're a kid that can play this game and play it at a high level.
Yes. And we're working every day to try to be better, and I'm just trying to go win some championships.
Love it, my friend. Well, thank you so much for making time for the podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was awesome.
Killer, man. Don't hang up just yet, but for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.